Welcome to Surviving Society Presents, the Black Health and Humanities Network podcast. These episodes focus on the politics of black health in modern society.
Okay, everyone, we're really excited today to be on Zoom Studio with Kalaichi and Chim. Kalaichi and Chim, hello.
Hi, Chantel.
We're actually recording on a Friday. I don't know if you guys can hear the excitement in my voice. We don't usually record on a Friday, so I'm feeling quite energised and excited and always so happy to be in conversation with incredible black women. Bashment horns, please, George.
Yes.
Now, Kalaichi's actually joining me for the next two episodes to help me host these final two episodes of the Black Health and Humanities Network podcast. So we're really excited today to be joined with Chim. Chim, hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. Chim, could you start off this episode by explaining to us exactly what your area of research and study is?
So my work is in medical anthropology and visual history. Like, that's the title of my PhD. I look at the history of medical photography. So in Malawi and Sudan, so my work focuses on medical photographic archives related to two British medical officers who worked in Malawi and Sudan. And I think this is the right place to point out that I am from Malawi. So this work is also quite personal in a way that, you know, I'm researching my own country, but to look at specific collections related to the history of medicine, I have to be in the UK because that's where the material is.
So your research is between Malawi and Sudan, and you're looking at the medical officers sort of during the colonial era who were taking photographs.
Yeah, of tropical diseases. So between 1902 and 1918, so that's the time period, but different diseases like elephantiasis, bilharzia, a bit of malaria. So just how, I guess, photography was tied to colonial medicine. So looking at those relationships and what the photographs mean now, since they're held in different British archives.
That, I mean, first and foremost, I had no idea that those kind of records or colonial records were still held in Britain. Why are they held in Britain?
I guess after they retired, their descendants, their wives, gave them to universities like the University of Oxford and Durham University. So they become connected to these bigger archives. Like Durham has the Sudan archive. And just, that sounds like, what, like the Sudan, like, what do you mean? But everything related to Sudan from like the Mahdist era, so the early Islamic period, everything from like, yeah, from maybe over 500 years ago is in Durham related to Sudan. So they consolidated a big collection. So people would finish their colonial careers and just deposit their materials here. And it's still ongoing. To the day, they receive different kinds of research materials and objects, museum objects as well. But I only interested in the photographs.
I knew that Durham had kind of held some of these archives for a while, but yeah, the scope, as you've just explained, is really kind of mind-boggling. Yeah, so you've spoken a bit about your research. Maybe you want to say a bit about how you came to be an academic and how you came to kind of undertake this kind of this massively important PhD project.
So my background is mostly in anthropology. So I did my undergrad in Malawi, so at the Catholic University, and my undergrad project was also on photography. So I was looking at photographs of a masquerade society and the health related messages that, you know, it gives out. So awareness raising. And then, so I've always been interested in photography. I worked for a bit at an archive in Malawi, digitizing photographs. And these were a much earlier period, so early 20th century as well. And I was like, who are these people? What's happening? Because it was linked to the Blantyre where I lived. And it just seems so different. And then I became interested in thinking more about, like, you know, the ethics of photography or why, you know, a lot of institutions are linked to, you know, former colonial spaces. And then I did a master's. So that led me to look for like a master's in just anything on like visual anthropology. So I got accepted into a program at Oxford, so in visual and museum anthropology. So then the plan was to be a curator, and then somebody introduced me to this collection. So it's when I started looking at medical photography specifically. And the first time I went into that archive, it's in the Western Library. Like, there's just something about it. I just felt like I had to focus on this collection. It was so different to me. I was told it was a medical album, and I felt I would see people, you know, being taken care of, like in hospital settings, but it was so violent. So I did that for my master's. I still had lots of questions. And then I started applying for a PhD. And then, so this Durham was a top choice. And then I just looked at the Sudan Archive. I was like, oh, maybe there's something similar. And there was a collection with similar photographic techniques, same trajectory in terms of the two doctors, like their education background, them being linked to institutions like Oxford, Edinburgh. So that kind of biography also came into focus. So that's, yeah, that's how I came into this journey, just like by going into an archive with curiosity and then being frustrated, being, you know, unnerved by it and like just having all these questions like why, but then seeing the importance of, yeah, asking those kind of questions and looking into medical ethics and, yeah, photography being a central point.
And Chim, what were they doing? So they were testing on people, taking photographs of them. But like, what was the backstory to that? Like, other than just kind of colonial extraction, clear abuse, issues of consent, but what was actually happening?
So it was the early 1900s, so tropical medicine. As you know, if you know the two big schools in the UK, so the London School and the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. So they are like being formed. So there's a lot. So doctors, so this is prestigious. If you get to a job in Sudan or in Malawi as a medical officer, it's like a prestigious opportunity. You're researching into the tropics. You're being the first person to investigate diseases. So it was also like a professional ambition for the two doctors to get into these spaces to contribute to research, to medical science. So I think that was the main driving, decision for the two of them to be embedded in this discipline as it was coming together. So it's also interesting because you see rivalries like in the archives in different places, but it was also the colonial office at the time was underfunded, so the issues with like budgeting, but it, so there's, yeah, that kind of experimentation into like the research itself, but also in, so which means there was no care for the people they researched, the people that there is, that, you know, colonial rule subjugated. So I see a lot of body experimentation, which is, so a lot of work with like prisoners, with soldiers, racialized language. So taking the photographs, but it was also like research. There were some elements where they were like diagnosing them, but you see comments like Black people have a better tolerance of pain and things like that. So that kind of language, like, oh, how much apathy do we have for them? Or we're going into these places to formalize medicine, but that is for the white man. So it was also for the intentions to make knowledge of these tropical diseases. That's what I'm looking for. It was research into it so that, like, you know, the white populations were, you know, safe. So that, you know, there wasn't a lot of like, so Black people were seen as contagious. So if there's a smallpox outbreak, you know, they had to do everything to stop it in case, you know, it affected the white populations in the different colonies. So I think that's like there is the social environment at the time, but yeah, lots of figuring out what's happening. But tropical medicine as a subfield of medicine was, yeah, just getting into place, and they wanted to be spearheading this work, and they did get accolades and things like that. And that's like another thing that I look at, which is to try and not focus on these men, is to think of the people in the photographs. What can we know about them beyond the archive?
Chim, this is amazing. And I've spoken to you before about how fascinating I find your research. I was really kind of interested, actually, what you were saying about kind of coming to understand that your relationship with kind of various archives has been one that's reached over time from before the MA. And I just wondered what some of the challenges of this kind of relationship, this long ongoing relationship with the archive, what do you find challenging in your work?
Really the violence and how to unpack it. Sometimes I feel, yeah, like how do you like approach somebody with these photographs? Like, you know, it could be someone I know that could be related to me. So how do you deal with that kind of emotional and personal connection? So I think that's the toughest thing. And just seeing things like, you know, a prisoner with shackles on his feet and knowing that there was no power, like what were his options during that photographic encounter? But an interesting thing with my research was that I interviewed medical specialists from Malawi who studied tropical medicine in different places. So that helped me understand the medical side of it, because they are quite medical photographs. They're things, you know, that I can see with my, you know, non-medical eyes, or things like tumors and things, but also then knowing that, you know, what happened to these people afterwards. Some may have survived, others didn't. So reconciling those different things is quite hard, I think, for me as well, to think, oh yeah, it's not, you know, they have to always be people. They're not data in an archive. I think that's the biggest challenge in also not replicating their violence. And it's something that, you know, a lot of scholars grapple with. If you think of Saidiya Hamman, Christina Sharp, they write about this, like, how do you work with these archives, but then also, you know, bring it out, but not replicate the violence. So I think that's an ongoing task. But yeah, it is important to bring these histories out and also find the language for it. So I think it's, for me, it was talking to different people and also constantly being, you know, confronted by this and not getting desensitized to them. Like, you know, don't get used to the violence. It's there. So just find language for it and treat people in the past with the dignity that was denied them.
Thank you so much, Chim. And I guess you're sort of talking a lot about the violence and talking a lot about like what is actually in the archive. Just thinking more about how we reach audiences beyond academia and beyond our research communities, like, why is this work important to everyday people to understand?
I think it sheds light on what was happening in the past. In terms of medical ethics, just to be very aware of like why certain people participate in different projects. So before the PhD as well, I worked for the Wellcome Trust in Malawi, and there was a lot of work with different communities in like health settings, in hospitals. But then just knowing that, you know, 100 years from now, that same data could be in an archive somewhere. So you want to make sure that like when someone looks at it, were protocols set? Did people consent for these photographs? Times late, there was no such thing, but now we know better. Now we know better to think of images of Black suffering. We're constantly confronted with the Black people always, you know, our lives are just magnified, and, you know, people in the past were always seen as passive, but then there are elements of resistance that also emerge in the same archives. But I think outside of academia, it's, yeah, knowing like photographs mean more than the show, because, you know, it is a violent photograph, but sometimes if you look carefully, there's someone there that had a life that was rich, and we should see them beyond that in a sense. And I think, yeah, it's also like, yeah, confronting photography, you know, as something of truth value, and not to be sly, but I think we've seen that in the UK the past weeks about like, you know, photographs and like things, because even these photographs were manipulated, actually. So that's something that has come up in the work as well. How if they would intentionally darken photographs to make certain things more apparent, or, you know, cutting off specific things. So it's, yeah, being careful, but then also not taking the archives as truth in a sense, because they were consolidated by people who had different intentions.
So where can hope be found in the archives? Is there any kind of, because I guess you spoke a little bit about Saidiya Hartman's work, who's a kind of, who's a theorist and a thinker who works with archives, but in a kind of a reparative mode to kind of rescue some of the kind of experiences of these kind of figures who kind of elude the kind of frame. Is there any hope that you can find in these archives?
You know, there is. So inspired by her work, but also Tina Kampf, who looks at photography, and she has this methodology called listening to images, where if you look carefully, so people's gestures or just how they engage with the camera just points to resistance, it points to them, you know, wanting to be part of this capture of being embedded in those narratives. So it's looking carefully, and there's this thing that emerges that people in the past reach out to you. So there are always people in the archive, the specific, sometimes people are named, sometimes they aren't, but there's a specific person in an image who will just speak out to you, and then I'll end up writing like a narrative about them. And in, like, for an example, there's a young woman in a series of smallpox photos, and she is identified as the source of a smallpox outbreak in Sudan. And, you know, the narrative in that story is just like pointing at her as, you know, the cause of this big, no, it was a small outbreak. But then the narrative was so one-sided, it was so magnified, it was to glorify colonial medicine and like vaccination. But then another story emerges that points me to, no, Sudan has a rich history of, you know, fighting smallpox outbreaks pre-colonization. So those stories come out more, and she, the photographs of her, she doesn't look at the camera. She is she has a defiant gaze. But then there are other photographs of her in recovery where she wears a top, which is a Sudanese dress, and she fashions it in very different ways. So you can tell that there were elements of self-fashioning. And we learn more about her. She was the daughter of a police officer, so someone of, you know, social significance, and also that she survived. She got cured. Like, the rush fell off. We see her differently. So she kind of like grasped at me. Like, the story became more about her than this man's, you know, narrative of, oh, I stopped the smallpox outbreak. But it's like, people in Sudan had survived outbreaks before. So why there's no stories not coming out? So that's an example of a hope. Another thing, and I kind of closed my thesis with this, in that in Malawi specifically, around the same time, there was a local Malayan photographer who took photographs of John Julembe, who led an uprising. So these are like happening at the same time. So there's also like a local emerging photography scene. So, you know, in my mind, I can't see photography of this period as just that, or through the gaze of a colonial officer, of a white man. But I'm like, there was a local scene of photography, and these photographs have survived. One of the photographs is like on our currency now. So it's kind of, it's bringing up those narratives. So I kind of like, and started it with like, oh yeah, this is how photography is, but then I can end it this way. And it's helped me as well to have that relief. Like, you know, there was different sides of photography, which is also what I've seen in my own family, the kind of like photo albums that we have. But then to kind of like come at that understanding, I had to look at these not so glamorous photographs, but in a sense, yeah, so that's where the hope comes in.
It's beautiful. Thank you so much, Chim. And I guess it would be really great for the listeners to know what the plan is next for you, both professionally, academically, personally. How are you going to take this work forwards?
Looking to publish more widely, and also trying to work with others to how we can, you know, ethically work with archives, get more people in the archives. I worked with artists who looked at these collections, but they said no to like working this kind of violence. So it's kind of like finding a language between like how, you know, I would want that this work that I've done, the conversations I've had, to somehow be in the archives for someone to come in and say, you know, I was unsettled by these photographs and you should be too, or that there needs to be a content warning. So one thing that I do when I show the photographs, I always give a warning and always say, you know, I'm also learning. Can we learn from each other? How can we look ethically? So having that conversation, and that, you know, voices from the global south or some like come out more in these archives. So, you know, this kind of work, I don't think when these photos were taken 100 years ago, the white officers thought that a Malawian would be in the archive 100 years later asking or turning the camera back to them and saying, you know, this is wrong, or we need to think better. So I think that's the way forward. And but yeah, now I'm happy to just like, after having submitted, just looking forward to like having a bit of a break, reading fiction,
having a bit of a break. Chim, Leitchi, thank you so much. What a fruitful conversation. And listeners, you'll be able to find in the episode notes links to Chim's work, but also other medical colonial links to this work and the archive. It's really, really important. And it's just so inspiring to see so many people like yourselves, Chim, like reclaiming that space as well. Because as we know, the archive has often been dominated by a particular group. But yeah, we're taking up that space. Chim, could you do a look? Can you explain what's happening in Sudan at the moment and why listeners need to pay attention?
So I've mentioned like the Malawi link, to, how this research is personal because I am Malawian. But my project also looks into Sudan, and I'm not from Sudan. It's been very important for me to constantly recognize why this work is important, but also to dedicate a lot of this work to people from Sudan. Since 15 April 2023, there's been a war in Sudan, and the latest figures were about 6 million displaced, but it's happened. This is not new thing. Sudan has been exposed to different violence, different regimes for decades, but then this time specifically, and in 2018 there was a figure of a woman in a tub, and that became like the image for the revolution. But then with this ongoing war, there hasn't been much attention in the media. But it's, so I'm just sharing the hashtag Keep Eyes on Sudan, because that's bringing to the fore the kind of like inequalities in terms of which places get media attention, but then also the just the different impact on women in particular, and on children, and the lack of efforts to get aid to Sudan. But then it's something that's, yeah, it makes this work more important. And access to archives, the archives are being destroyed, people's personal archives, the National Museum, and those kind of collections. And Sudan has a very deep history, and I think it's a call for people, yeah, to keep their eyes and ears open, also just to have hope that the war ends and no more lives are lost.
Thank you so much, Chim, for sharing that with us. And listeners, you'll find links in the episode notes to everything that Chim's just spoken about. Or it's hashtag Eyes on Sudan.
Eyes on Sudan.
Hashtag Eyes on Sudan. Thank you so much, both.
Thank you for listening to Surviving Society.
To support our work, you can rate,
review and subscribe. To host or produce a series of Surviving Society,
get in touch with us via Twitter or Instagram.